Versatime. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. U.S. President Barack Obama Thursday opened a two-day nuclear security summit in Washington. Delegations from 50 countries are attending. Mr. Obama says that in the wake of attacks in places, including Brussels, there is an urgency around the nuclear issue as well as the issue of terrorism generally. Earlier Thursday, the president held a series of meetings with leaders. Some world leaders who attended a White House summit dinner Thursday were from countries that have experienced terrorist attacks. Belgium's federal prosecutor says the main suspect in last November's terrorist attacks in Paris can be extradited to France. The French justice minister says he expects Salah Abdeslam to be sent to Paris within 10 days. The suspect's lawyer says his client agrees to be extradited. A car bomb attack Thursday in Turkey has left 6 police officers dead and at least 23 people wounded. The blast took place in the Kurdish-majority city of Diyarbakir on Thursday. According to Turkish media, the bomb exploded while a police vehicle passed by the city's main bus terminal. There has been no immediate claim of responsibility for the attack. A spokeswoman for the presidential campaign of businessman Donald Trump told a CNN interviewer Thursday that the candidate misspoke when he suggested some form of punishment for women who have abortions. Trump challengers for the presidential nomination, Ohio Governor John Kasich and Texas Senator Ted Cruz, have criticized the remarks. Trump has surged to the top of the once large Republican presidential field. He faces a tough primary election Tuesday in the state of Wisconsin. This is VOA News. The United Nations says the Syrian government is not allowing aid agencies to deliver life-saving humanitarian relief to hundreds of thousands of people living in several besieged areas in the country. Lisa Schlein reports.
The special advisor to the UN Special Envoy for Syria, Jan Egeland, is calling on the United States, Russia, and other nations of influence to pressure President Bashar al-Assad's government into giving UN agencies the green light to deliver this critical aid. He says the UN has succeeded in distributing aid to 150,000 people in 11 besieged cities since an agreement was worked out in Munich 6 weeks ago. Egeland says he fears the momentum after Munich, which has made these deliveries possible, is being lost. Lisa Schlein, Geneva.
The United Nations Human Rights Commissioner described new allegations of sexual abuse against UN and French soldiers Thursday as sickening. Zaid Ra'ad Al-Hussein said the matter would be fully investigated. AIDS-Free World, a U.S.-based nonprofit group that tracks peacekeeper sex abuse cases, said three girls told a UN human rights official that a French military commander had them, along with a fourth girl, stripped and forced to have sex with a dog while inside a military camp. A UN spokesman said Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was shocked to the core when he heard about the latest allegations. U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power says more needs to be done to stop the abuse.
If you're a soldier, you believe that there is impunity because there has never been real accountability. And so the leadership here is aware of that. They're trying to fix it. But a lot of the work has to happen in the capitals of the countries that send the troops to MINUSCA.
Samantha Power. The International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia acquitted Serbian ultranationalist leader Vojislav Šešelj Thursday of all 9 counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Those were brought against him in connection with the Balkan Wars in the 1990s.
Pour la majorité.
In a 2-1 ruling, the chief judge said that Serbian plans to create a greater Serbia by uniting lands they considered Serb territory in Croatia and Bosnia were a political goal and not a criminal plan, as prosecutors alleged. The Party of Myanmar Democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi Thursday submitted a proposal in parliament that would make her an official state advisor. That move would allow her to play a dominant role in running the country. The bill would allow her to control and conduct activities of all the ministries. She already holds 4 posts in the cabinet. The measure is expected to pass the legislature easily. In Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, April 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's Supreme Court confirms the re-election of President Yoweri Museveni.
The government, of course, is very happy because it has confirmed what we knew very well, that the people of Uganda had expressed their choice, and President Museveni won the election by over 60%.
Retired Major General Jim Muwezi is Uganda's Minister of Information and National Guidance. Opposition leader Kizza Besigye says the independence of Uganda's judiciary has been compromised. The opposition disrupts President Uhuru Kenyatta's speech to the nation. And South Africa's opposition party moves to impeach President Jacob Zuma.
What the Constitutional Court found was that President Zuma had failed to carry out his constitutional responsibilities and had acted in a manner which was unconstitutional and illegal.
James Self is chairman of South Africa's Opposition Democratic Alliance's federal executive. Rights groups called on Republic of Congo authorities to end arbitrary arrests, and Zimbabwe failed to pay 2015 bonuses promised to health sector workers. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Uganda's Supreme Court on Thursday upheld the re-election of President Yoweri Museveni in the February 18 election. The court rejected a petition brought by former Prime Minister and presidential candidate Amama Mbabazi. The Electoral Commission announced on February 20th that Mr. Museveni had won 60% of the vote to Kizza Besigye's 30.5%. Mr. Mbabazi had asked the court to nullify the results on the grounds the Electoral Commission did not adhere to the country's electoral laws. But the court noted that while there were some irregularities, they did not affect the final results of the election to justify annulment. Retired Major General Jim Muwezi is Uganda's Minister of Information and National Guidance. He says the Supreme Court ruling confirms the choice of Ugandans when they re-elected President Museveni.
The government, of course, is very happy because it has confirmed what we knew very well, that the people of Uganda had expressed their choice, and President Museveni won the election by over 60%. So the Supreme Court has confirmed what we believe.
The main challenger, Dr. Besigye, who came second, says that the court ruling was not surprising, but this process cannot legitimize the re-election of President Museveni.
But what else can legitimize the president's re-election if it's not the result as declared by the Electoral Commission and by the highest court of the land? What else can make his election legitimate?
It seems to me, Mr. Minister, there is a lot of acrimony. Do you think President Museveni has a responsibility to see how best he can bring the country together?
Of course. That is true, that the responsibility is with the president and the government, as it was when he took up arms and liberated this country, and he has done everything to bring it to what it is today. It still remains his responsibility to bring everybody together, but it also is the responsibility of anybody who takes it upon himself to lead people. And the leader of the biggest group of opposition also has a responsibility to make sure that he contributes to that process of unifying the country and let the country move forward with the development.
The question is that if President Museveni was elected by the people, what people do not understand is why do you put under house arrest for more than 40 days your main challenger?
No, he's not under house arrest. If you've been following the events both before and after the elections, Dr. Besigye has been declaring and saying openly that he is going to defy everything, the laws of the country. So all the police is doing is just keeping him under surveillance because of what the police knows, that when Besigye moves, he wants to create crowds and cause public disorder. And that is all. But he's not under house arrest. His movements are being monitored and regulated by the police.
Retired Major General Jim Muhwezi is Uganda's Minister of Information and National Guidance. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. Uganda's main opposition leader and former presidential candidate, Dr. Kizza Besigye, says no process can legitimize the re-election of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni in the February 18 election. His comments follow Thursday's decision by the Ugandan Supreme Court dismissing a petition challenging Mr. Museveni's re-election. Dr. Besigye, who has been under house arrest for more than 40 days since the election, says the Ugandan judiciary could not have delivered an impartial ruling because its independence has been compromised.
Pretty much what I expected, and that is because of a number of reasons. First and foremost, every petition, even in the best of circumstances, is faced with very many obstacles against a petitioner, because a petitioner in a presidential election has only 10 days to prepare and present a petition to court. And so assembling a petition in 10 days and presenting sufficient evidence to court in the best circumstances is not an easy task. But these are not the best circumstances. We are talking about a situation where there is heavy intimidation of the citizens generally and certainly anybody who purports to be a witness. But over and beyond that, we have the challenge of the independence of our institutions, including the courts.
Dr. Besigye, you did not petition, and do you feel that you should have been the one petitioning?
Well, of course, I did not petition. I could not petition because from the time before the official announcement of the election results, I was detained and I am still in detention, as I talked to you, more than 40 days after the elections. So I could not, even if I wished to, I could not petition. And that is, of course, something that says a lot about the election itself. If a candidate who has been announced as a winner in a contentious election uses his incumbency powers to lock up his opponents and disable them from challenging the outcome of an election.
The government spokesman, Mr. Ofwano Opondo, said that it's about time that you accept the ruling of the court. He indicates here that you do not have legitimacy.
Well, I think his statement must be laughable, because if I would be required to respect whatever decision of the court, I should have been allowed present my own petition to court.
You have been quoted, Dr. Besigye, as saying, for example, some of the issues you described as the fundamental problem which calls for Ugandans to free themselves from captivity. How do Ugandans do that?
Well, of course, Ugandans, at the end of the day, have the ultimate power in this country. And if indeed they organize it, there is no way anybody who, whatever kind of guns they may have in their at their disposal, there is no way they can force themselves onto the people of Uganda if our people are mobilized and organized. And for me, I think that that was the best benefit we got out of the last election, because we used the rare chance of talking to our people.
Dr. Kizza Besigye is the former presidential candidate of Uganda's main opposition Forum for Democratic Change. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bati in Washington. Today's Friday, the first day of April 2016. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Several human rights organizations have denounced a wave of opposition arrests in the Republic of Congo, and tensions remain high in the country following the recent re-election of incumbent President Denis Sassou Nguesso. The opposition has contested the results and called on the Congolese people for civil disobedience. Emily Job reports from Abidjan.
Nous demandons aux acteurs politiques de résoudre Christian Munzeo, president of the Engagement for Peace and Human Rights Organization, says the group is asking politicians to resolve their political disagreements by political means and not through violence, curtailing freedom and arbitrary arrest. The arrest followed the announcement last week of the re-election of incumbent president Denis Sassou Nguesso with about 60% of the vote in a controversial first-round poll, extending his more than 30-year rule in the Central African nation. The opposition claims the election was rigged and has denounced the crackdown.
DGST ne peut pas se permettre de débarquer.
Coordinator of the opposition coalition, IDC Frossad, Charles Zachary Boao, says the secret police can't come in somebody's home in the middle of the night, arrest him in front of his family, and take him to an unknown place, and then claim this is the rule of law. Congolese government spokesperson Thie Mungala told VOA that the alleged wave of arrest was more of a wavelet, since it only concerned two people who have been accused of compromising national security. Mungala also said civil disobedience is not in the Congolese constitution, is therefore illegal, and should be treated as such. The poll and the announcement of the result occurred during a media blackout to prevent the opposition from releasing illegal results, according to the government. But Boao says they still intend to do just that. He says, we continue to work and we will publish our result today or tomorrow, and we will carry on civil resistance until the real results are accepted. Boao adds that some candidates are preparing to appeal the election results. Emily Yop for VOA News in Abidjan.
The Opposition Democratic Alliance Party of South Africa has proposed a motion in Parliament to impeach President Jacob Zuma following a constitutional court ruling on Thursday that Mr. Zuma should pay part of the $16 million of public funds used to renovate his private home. James Self, chairman of the Democratic Alliance's federal executive, says it remains unclear if parliamentarians from Mr. Zuma's ruling African National Congress Party will back the motion to impeach the president. Two-thirds of lawmakers is required to move an impeachment proceedings forward. Self tells reporter Peter Clotty that President Zuma has a track record of failure to abide by the Constitution, which he says warrants a motion to impeach the president.
What the Constitutional Court found was that President Zuma had failed to carry out his constitutional responsibilities and had acted in a manner which was unconstitutional and illegal. That constitutes, in our view, a serious violation of the Constitution. And our view is that he should now be impeached. And we have proposed a motion to Parliament in terms of Section 83 of the Constitution that he be impeached. That requires a two-thirds majority of the South African Parliament, but we believe that there is a duty on members of Parliament from all parties in view of this really damning judgment by the Constitutional Court.
Due to the overwhelming support that the ANC enjoys in Parliament, do you think this impeachment proceedings will enjoy success since the DA move of a previous impeachment failed to achieve its objective?
We have introduced a motion of no confidence, but the Constitutional Court also had some very stern words to say about the conduct of the National Assembly, in the sense that the National Assembly had not fulfilled its constitutional duty in holding the president to account. And we believe that if the majority party does not support a motion of this nature, given its constitutional responsibilities, that decision too may very well be reviewable in court.
The ANC executives, and by way of saying this, the ANC as a body, gave its full backing recently to President Zuma. So what do you think are the real prospect of your move of impeachment in Parliament?
Well, it's less important what the ANC majority does. The Constitutional Court made it very clear that the majority party had not fulfilled its constitutional duties to hold President Zuma accountable, and that the failure to do this may very well in turn be reviewable by court.
President Zuma has said through his officials that he's willing to pay part of the monies that were used to renovate or probably refurbish his Nkandla private home. Isn't this enough to prevent a possible impeachment, if I may ask?
Yeah, well, he's trying, obviously, to minimize the political damage and the legal damage to his reputation. But this is not the first time that the Constitutional Court has found him wanting in a very serious measure for his failure to uphold the Constitution.
James Self is chairman of South Africa's opposition Democratic Alliance's federal executive. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Cape Town, South Africa. Some opposition members were ejected from Kenya's parliament on Thursday for interrupting President Uhuru Kenyatta's annual State of the Nation address. Mr. Kenyatta's administration has come under increasing criticism in the past 6 months for corruption and the high cost of living. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The whistling and shouting by opposition lawmakers began at the start of Kenyatta's speech. Parliament Speaker Justice Muturi wasted no time in reminding them how they should conduct themselves. The shouting, whistling and heckling continued, and the speaker started ordering opposition members out of the chambers. This year's address comes amid several issues surrounding the Electoral Commission and corruption allegations affecting several ministries. Last year, the president fired a third of his ministers, but critics say they feel more need to be done to prosecute those involved in the graft.
Your Excellency, let me leave your address.
This occasion, Mr. Speaker, is not just important.
The commotion in Parliament continued more than 30 minutes before President Uhuru Kenyatta was able to finish his speech. The address was meant to highlight the government's achievements in the past year and its plans in the coming year.
Despite global economic and financial turmoil, our Kenyan economy has shown notable resilience. A strong example of this resilience is the performance of the vital tourism and hospitality sectors. They suffered severe setbacks as a result of terrorist attacks.
The president had something to say to those who opposed his government and were not happy with the direction the country was taking.
Those in opposition and alternative society have disagreed with our understanding of this nationalist covenant. And as a democratically elected government, we have supported their concerns as part of the expansion of citizen expression.
President Kenyatta has one last State of the Nation address before the country goes to the polls in August next year. Mohammed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
The Zimbabwe government has failed to pay 2015 bonuses promised to health sector workers, which were scheduled to be paid yesterday, Thursday. Instead, in a statement, the Ministry of Health told workers to wait for further information from the Treasury. Zimbabwe is currently experiencing serious economic problems. Fortune Yamende of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association says the workers are not happy about the delay in the payment of their bonuses.
It is a sad development, and it is an understandable development when we consider the issues which have to do with quality of care, which are being addressed by the healthcare workers who are working at these central hospitals. When the doctor-to-patient ratio is as it stands right now, without the junior practitioners, then we can expect overburdened middle-level and senior-level practitioners, and in itself will result in poor clinical outcomes for those members of the public who would seek help at those institutions. And there should have been a contingency plan, knowing that this issue of contracts has been on the table being discussed backwards and forward since Christmas. There should have been a contingency plan. Yes, we can get maybe armed forces to come and assist us, but that should have been the contingency plan from 1 March. Not now when we're in a crisis and when our major hospitals now, Bilo and Harare Central, have closed outpatient departments to the public and only attending emergencies.
What do you recommend the government should do to address this impasse?
The wait and watch and see approach which the Ministry of Health has been demonstrating until this point, is disappointing. And because they are the primary duty bearer around the right to help, they need to be proactive to sort out this impasse.
That was Fortune Yamende of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association speaking from Harare with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe program. It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with volleyball. Tunisia's Esperance pipped Egypt's Smouha by 3-2 as Egypt's El Geish dismissed Libya's Sueli 3-1 in semifinal action at the Africa Men's Volleyball Club Championships in Cairo, Egypt on Thursday. Today, Friday, Sueli challenged Smouha in the bronze medal playoff before the final between Esperance and El Geish. Turning to football, Liberia's Lone Stars have surprised their fans by topping Group A with 9 points in the ongoing 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers. Speaking to my colleague James Batty, Liberia's head coach James Salinsa Deba offers an insight into what may be behind the Lone Stars' current rich vein of form.
I think the secret behind our success, you know, has been hard work and dedication. And moreover, the government has been very supportive. And when you have that level of motivation, definitely the players will, you know, put in their best.
Some people say that you are exceeding expectations. For example, they say you are even doing better than some foreign coaches have done. Does this say that perhaps Liberia needs to pay more attention to more domestic coaches?
I think for what I have accomplished in a relatively short period of time, you know, I've definitely surpassed my predecessors in terms of results. And as you know, this career is result-based. Once you're not getting the kind of results, I mean, you definitely, and most especially the previous coaches that we had, the King of Liberia accumulated a vast sum of salary, and they did not perform. They did not perform.
Coach, you are on top of the group.
Yes.
What is the expectation for the next game?
You know, there's no time for complacency. We have Togo in June. If we have to have any chance of qualification, we have to beat Togo in June. So it's no time to be complacent.
That was James Salinsa Deba, the Liberia Lone Stars head coach, speaking in Monrovia, Liberia. Meanwhile, Tunisia host Niger at the start of the qualifiers for the African Under-20 Championships in Tunis today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Sierra Leone play Gambia, Rwanda and Uganda clash, Mozambique host Mauritius, and Swaziland are at home to Namibia. On Sunday, Liberia play Guinea, Algeria test Mauritania, Sudan welcome Kenya, Zimbabwe face Botswana, and Ethiopia engage Somalia. And that's it for Daybreak African Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday morning. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, April 1st.
I wish to commend the court in Ekiti State of Nigeria that has sentenced a rapist to 10 years imprisonment. I believe that would serve as a deterrent to other perpetrators across the country. I am Prince John Shio from Obaniku in Ogudu Cattle Ranch, Cross Rapids, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. United Nations says formation of South Sudan's transitional government of national unity could happen in the next 2 weeks. The head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, JMEC, said on Thursday. Festus Mohai, the chairperson of JMEC and a former president of Botswana, told the UN Security Council that despite violation to the ceasefire, there has been progress. That's it for this Friday, April 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you a very good weekend.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modu talks about autism, still an ailment with no known specific cause and no known cure yet. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC. right here on VOA Africa.